courts are behind them, that habeas, especially the end of the year.
That, the first case this morning is State versus Brooks. State versus Brooks. Good morning.
Morning.
Go ahead and get water if you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you.
Looked like you were starting to.
I actually didn't want that. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Johansi Christie. I'm from the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Brooks, on his direct appeal from his convictions after a jury trial that was held in Lancaster County District Court. There were several errors assigned in the brief. I have 10 minutes, my understanding. I intend to try to address three issues. First, it was, number one, it was error for the court to not allow appellant to present reputation or opinion evidence as to the primary witness's character for truthfulness or untruthfulness. Number two, the evidence was insufficient to sustain a conviction for the unauthorized practice of law. And then number three, that the evidence was insufficient to sustain a conviction for death by deception.
Counsel, can I just kind of throw you for a loop here and
okay.
maybe just go in a little different direction first, and that has to do with the jury instructions, and it appears that the jurors, regarding that misdemeanor,
yes,
that has an 18-month statute of limitations,
yes,
and it looks like the jury was charged in a broader
yes.
okay, span of time.
Yes.
I was just wondering if you could address that first.
Okay, thank you. Well, certainly. And I believe that you're speaking to, I believe it was instruction 4B, which in my brief, I believe it was an incorrect statement of law, and the amended information would have covered December 11, 2011 through July 31st, 2012. June 11th, 2012 through July 31st, 2012 is the only period of time that is not barred by the statute of limitations.
Correct.
And so I think that it was error for the jury to be allowed to consider that time period, and there was certainly evidence and conduct offered during a time period that was would have been before
right.
July 11,
right.
2012, and I think it's clear that was an incorrect statement of law that was provided to the jury, and they were certainly allowed to consider improper evidence and to support a conviction. I do think that the trial counsel at least certainly attempted to address that issue. I do believe there was a motion to quash. I do believe that there were several objections to further prosecution because it was barred by the statute of limitations.
Right.
And so I do think that was error in this case.
Do you think he could be retried for that? If we agree with him.
I'm sorry?
Do you think he can be retried for that?
I would say no.
Why?
I double jeopardy.
Yeah, but the case law says that if there's sufficient evidence to convict in the first place, no matter what the evidence, even if the evidence was inadmissible, the courts can retry the person. I'm just wondering how that works in this scenario.
Yes. Well, if it was, I would submit that it was not sufficient evidence, and the evidence that was considered was outside of the statute of limitations. And so the evidence, if we were to review the record, the evidence that was submitted that falls within the statute of limitations is
right.
not sufficient for a to sustain a conviction for the unauthorized practice of law.
Okay, thank you.
Going back to It was error for the court to not allow appellant to present reputation or opinion evidence as to Ms. Fitzgerald's character for truthfulness or untruthfulness. I think that it is clearly relevant. There's no question that the credibility of a witness is always relevant. I would also point out that Ms. Fitzgerald was a named victim in at least the theft by deception charge. So she was not just a witness, she was actually a named victim as well. She also provided a lot of testimony with respect to both counts. And so any objection that would have been based on relevancy, and any objection that would have been sustained based on relevancy, is clearly wrong, pursuant to well-established case law and pursuant to the Nebraska revised statutes, which allows the defendant to present reputation or opinion evidence as to a witness's character for truthfulness or untruthfulness.
What do you think is the foundation required by Nebraska law as a predicate to giving reputation testimony?
I would submit that I do believe that that question is with the discretion of the trial court. And I think that it's, when reviewing the case law, I think it's that the standard is such that the trial court would believe that the witness is in a position to provide an opinion, such as how long have they known the person, who have they spoken with about this person's reputation, and how is it that they have formed this opinion. And I think it's that the discretion of the trial court whether these testimony provided establishes that to a sufficient basis for the trial court.
What do you think is the best the testimony gets as far as the foundation here to give an opinion, or to testify as to reputation?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Sure. I'm sure you'll recall from the bill that the dialogue with the judge and asking, well, who is the community, so to speak? That's my paraphrasing.
Yes. Okay.
What's the best that evidence gets for you as to what is this community that her reputation exists within and this witness has knowledge of?
I think the community includes obviously just the broad general community of just where they live, but also where she works.
There's no testimony about that.
Well, not necessarily, no. I mean, she did testify that she knew her from work.
Right.
And that it's been several years and she's worked with her for several years. Most of the testimony was about her interactions in the work environment. True. But she did talk about how they have been in the same work environment, presumably in the same community for that same period of time, living and working together. Now, most of the testimony was about her interactions with her at work, but she also talked about other employees and other people that she worked with and that I believe that were also around Ms. Fitzgerald as well.
But we don't know the number of employees, for example, right?
Yes.
And we don't know how often there was that the witness was there in this environment.
I would not necessarily disagree with that. I would just point out that the witness, when attempting to establish foundation, did talk about the years and the time frame that she did work around Ms. Fitzgerald and that she did interact with her on a regular basis. While she didn't testify to the number of employees, I do believe she testified to the number of years that she was around, or at least when she started working, and that Ms. Fitzgerald had been there since she started. And so we get a picture of the time frame, at least, that they've been around each other in the same working environment.
Okay. Thank you.
If there's not any more questions, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, George Love on behalf of the State of Nebraska, the appellee in this matter. I'm sure the Court has lots of questions. I don't really have anything to add other than what I put in my brief, so I will just submit it on brief, and if the court has questions, I'd be glad to answer them or try to.
I wouldn't mind if you addressed Judge Irwin's questions of the appellant regarding the jury instruction and the time frame.
Let's begin with remand. If the court finds, as a matter of law, that the statute of limitations or that the charges were not appropriate beyond the statute of limitations, then it's barred. Retrial is barred, matter of law. So I'll answer that. Is there any other?
What's the authority?
The statute and the case law. And it's in my brief with respect to that.
And this is on the unauthorized practice.
That's on the third assignment of error, Your Honor, the statute of limitations. And I point out in brief why I do not think it's barred, because I think the amended information.
Why do you think it's barred or not barred?
I do not think that the charge of the unauthorized practice of law is barred.
Oh, I misunderstood you. I thought you said it was barred.
No, I mean a retrial. I'm sorry. Your question was if you find, or at least as I understood it, if you find that it is barred as a matter of law, that my analysis is incorrect, then I don't think you can retry it.
I guess just to repeat my question, is you have an instruction that's broader than the 18-month statute of limitations. Can he be retried, assuming we reverse on that, can he be retried, assuming there was evidence that occurred within the 18-month statute of limitations that would serve?
Then the evidence would be sufficient and he could be retried.
Yes. Okay.
And that's the sum and substance of my argument in brief, Your Honor, I certainly would agree that the amended information and the time frame charge in there came at the tail end of the statute of limitations, but I also think that there was acts within that last couple of months before it was barred by the statute of limitations, which would permit the charge to go forward. And because prior bad acts do not count by the Nesbitt decision, that all of the evidence would then become admissible regarding that charge. So that's my analysis with respect to the statute of limitations, Your Honor. As far as, if my analysis is correct, it's not a continuing, ongoing offense. In other words, not one where every day by operation of law it is automatically committed again. In other words, take some affirmative acts. Each individual act could be a separate crime, but it's not a continuing offense. So I think here the appellant could have been charged with a number of counts of the unauthorized practice of law for filing the dissolution of marriage, for filing the motion for reconsideration, for the notice of appeal, on and on and on and on. All of those events occurring later in time, which, by the way, extends the statute of limitations. He could have been charged with separate offenses for those, but he was charged with one offense. And I think that offense probably fits within the prohibition of file or drawing pleadings or other papers to be signed and filed by a party. That's really the crux of the matter here. And he also advised him on what to do and so on and so forth. He basically provided legal advice on this young man's divorce case. Now, that would be the unauthorized practice of law as well. As far as the exclusion of evidence in the form of opinion, I think was your next question, if I remember correctly, the evidence was excluded because the foundation wasn't properly laid. I think, as I stated in brief, I think what was going on here is his counsel was basically asking the wrong question. Okay, what is the reputation, good or bad? Okay, if it's going to be opinion evidence on reputation or evidence of reputation, it has to be an opinion based upon foundationally in the community or where the person resides. Okay, now I suppose in a very narrow sense you could say, a work community. So, for example, if I work for ConAgra, okay, thousands of employees, you could probably call that a community. But we don't know that. And that's part of the problem here, why I was excluded by the trial court, because the foundation was never laid for that opinion evidence. He was, in my humble opinion, what he was confusing was character evidence with reputation evidence. And that was the problem he was having. He couldn't cite to the court what he was trying to do. So I would say that the argument really has been waived, because on appeal, he did not present the issue of 27608 evidence to the trial court whatsoever. He was unable to do that. And he was unable to allow the foundation for the opinion evidence. So any, and finally, lastly, the error would have been a harmless error in exclusion of the evidence, because it was harmless error because the statute regarding the unauthorized practice of law prohibits him from doing that because he's not a party to the action, okay? So I think the court was correct in excluding the evidence because the proper foundation was not laid for that evidence. I guess I would submit it with that. Oh, I'm sorry, sufficiency did come up. Sufficiency of the evidence is a question on intent, is what was raised on appeal, and I think that's a question of fact for the jury, which this court generally doesn't revisit. There are no further questions. I guess I would ask that you affirm in all respects.
No further questions.
And thank you.
Thank you. How much time does Mr. Christie have remaining?
Thank you. In response, I'd like to point out a couple things. Appley said that it's not, with respect to the statute of limitations, that it would have been prior bad acts that do not count. I would point out that there was not a 404 hearing, and there was not a finding by the court that these prior bad acts did happen by clear and convincing evidence and that they should come in for that purpose, and there was not a jury instruction as to how they are to consider bad acts. It's important to understand that the prior bad acts that he's referring to was offered as substantive evidence in this case to sustain the conviction. So to now, on appeal, say what was prior bad acts, well, then there would need to be a hearing pursuant to 404 character evidence, and the trial court would have had to determine that. Also in the record, in the Bill of Exceptions, and actually I believe it's on page 69 of the Bill of Exceptions, when they're getting ready to start the trial, the state indicates that they have no bad acts to offer. So to now submit on appeal that it was bad act evidence, I think is inconsistent and is not logical, unfortunately, at this point. It also points out it's not a continuing offense. However, I think it's clear that this was charged as a continuing offense. It was charged over a broad time frame, so it's important to point that out. With respect to opinion or reputation, if counsel asked the wrong questions, I would remind the court that the objection was sustained on relevancy, and the jury was instructed to disregard it based upon relevancy.
The reputation evidence, you mean?
Yes.
I think it was sustained on foundation and relevancy. We can check the record.
Okay. Thank you. And certainly we're asking that the... for the reasons stated today and in the brief, that the court would overturn both convictions or an alternative remand the trial or remand for retrial in the errors assigned. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. You are both excused and the case is submitted. Next case is In Re Interest of Dana H.